Thank you, Carly. So our next presenter is Melissa Alperin, and she's more commonly known by her nickname Moose, which I'm getting used to. But she currently chairs a distance-based MPH program at the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University, and she's also the director of the Emory Public Health Training Center. And her talk today is going to be about adult learning theory.
Well, I'd like to start by acknowledging my colleagues who work with me with the Emory Public Health Training Center, Laura Lloyd, Tara Redd, Kathy Miner, Sahar Salik, and Ariella Friedman. And I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. Our learning objectives for the presentation, by the end you'll be able to describe key tenets of adult learning theory and also describe strategies for incorporating adult learning theory into trainings. So let me get a little bit of a feel for who's in the audience, if you don't mind, and wonder, how many of you have ever heard of adult learning theory? Oh, good. So we all could get up here and do this instead of me. How many of you incorporate adult learning theory into your own work or you would like to? Okay, terrific. Well, thank y'all for giving me a little bit of perspective about who's in the audience and where you're coming from. So I'd like to share with you today how the Emory Public Health Training Center incorporates adult learning theory into its training activities. So let me start by providing some information about the training center. We are funded by HRSA, the Health Resources and Services Administration, and the purpose of the Public Health Training Center network is to improve the nation's health public health system by strengthening knowledge and skills in not just the current public health workforce, but also the future public health workforce. At Emory, we are one of 37 public health training centers that exist nationally, and our three primary areas of activity at Emory are providing internships for public health students, training for the current public health workforce, and then trainings for boards of health members. To provide you with a little bit of context about Georgia, which is the geographic area that the Emory Public Health Training Center serves, we are the largest state east of the Mississippi. And while there are some areas that are 5 hours away from Atlanta, easily 5 hours away from Atlanta, and although we have some big cities, Atlanta being one of them, Savannah, Macon, or a couple of other cities, the state is largely rural. Our public health system is set up that we have 159 counties, each of which has a county health department. They roll up into 18 health districts, and then we have the one state health department. And in 2012, it was estimated that we had about 6,500 public health employees that were governmental, so either at the county, district, or state level. Now, our training activities with the Public Health Training Center really fall along a continuum from 1 hour, 2 hour trainings, all the way to multi-day trainings. So we have a Models of Excellence lecture series, which is a series that is, the lectures are about an hour and a half. So that's at one end of the continuum. At the other end of the continuum, we have the Public Health Practice Academy trainings, which are generally 2 day, sometimes 1 day trainings that really delve into public health skills. We teach most of our trainings are more skill-based versus content-based or disease-specific. Along the continuum as well, we have partner-requested trainings. They really could fit anywhere on the continuum. Within the last year, year and a half, we've started providing trainings with some colleagues and partner organizations, including Georgia SOFI, the Georgia Public Health Association, so our state affiliate, and the Southeastern Institute for Training and Evaluation. And then we also have boards of health trainings, which we do. Those are typically 1 day, although they're sometimes 1 day spread out over a couple of days, so a half a day one afternoon and a half day the next morning. In terms of some of the content areas that we cover, and these are really specific to the Public Health Practice Academy trainings, you see things, as I said before, that are very much skill-oriented and skill-based, so community needs assessment, epi and surveillance, evaluation, grant writing, public health informatics, so on and so forth. With this next slide, the point I'd really like to illustrate is we reach a broad variety of disciplines with our trainings. So if we were to just look at folks who come to the Public Health Practice Academy, you see not only a mix of disciplines, but we also have a mix of levels. So we have people who are at the management leadership level within their agency, as well as people that are on the front line. If we were to take a look at who comes to the Models of Excellence lecture, well, this is a series that's held at the university. And what you see is you see people in the previous list, but we also have federal employees. We are physically right next door to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and so we draw an audience from there. We also draw audience and learners from around the university, not only from the School of Public Health, but the School of Nursing, the School of Medicine, and depending on what the topic is, elsewhere across the university. And then with our Boards of Health trainings, here we have community leaders that are participating, and these are folks that perhaps aren't traditionally considered public health or part of the public health workforce, but they absolutely are an essential part of the public health workforce in our state. So now that I've provided you with a little bit of context about the Emory Public Health Training Center and what we do and sort of the context in which we operate, I'd like to shift gears and talk about adult learning theory. And I'd like to start by talking about pedagogy versus andragogy. Pedagogy is really the principles and the practices of guiding learning in children. And so some of the assumptions that we have when we're talking about pedagogy are that learners are dependent personalities and that learners come without previous experiences. With andragogy, we're looking at the principles and practices of helping adults learn. So assumptions here are very different. Here, learners are independent personalities. Here, learners are unique because they all come to a learning experience with their own experiences and with their past experiences. In this type of environment, learning is both linear and interactive. And while you'll find in certain situations adults may regress towards being dependent learners, it's really only temporary. Ideally, what adults want to be is independent. So when it comes to education, kids and adults really are very different. So if you would, stop and think for a moment about yourself as a learner. Think about yourself today versus when you were in maybe junior high school. When we were younger, we tended to base our learning on what we expected that we would be doing in the future. As adults, though, we are always and constantly thinking about what do I have to get done today, what do I have to get done tomorrow, and how is what I'm about to learn going to help me get that done? So teaching adults really is very different than teaching kids. If we explore some of the principles of andragogy, what we find is that adults develop towards independent, self-directed persons. Adults also have a reservoir of experience, which becomes a resource for them as they learn. And they filter information through their past experiences and through their frame of reference. So again, we're constantly thinking about our connections, we're thinking about how new information, new skills fit within our own current thinking and our own experiences. Kids don't necessarily do this because they don't have the same kind of prior experience that adults have. Also, readiness to learn is related to the immediacy of use. Think about it. If you've got to do something tomorrow and you don't know how to do it, you can be really ready to learn how to do it. Whereas if you don't have to do something for 6 months or a year down the line, you don't have quite that same impetus to learn. Readiness to learn is also related to the tasks of adults, either current or anticipated role, directly related to the comment I just made. Again, if you're currently doing something, or maybe you're not currently doing it, but you anticipate needing to do it, that readiness to learn is elevated. And so adults are motivated by internal factors really than more than they are external factors. Now, not all trainings follow adult learning theory. And I recognize that, and I know we've probably all been to trainings that don't follow some of the principles of adult learning theory. But let me paint for a moment a picture of the ideal adult learning environment. The ideal adult learning environment, it's designed to minimize dependence, yet maximize independence. Adult learning strategies should increase learners' competence in identified skills. So one of the things that means is you need to know what those skills are. Adult learning strategies should adapt to learners' previous experiences with skills and content. So you need to be flexible. You need to be fluid enough to go with the flow and use your learners' experiences. Faculty in adult learning settings really function as both instructors and facilitators. And adults need very clear expectations. They want clear expectations about the skills and the content that they're going to master in that learning environment. They want clear expectations about the processes used to facilitate the learning, as well as how their performance is going to be assessed. So this all sounds great, but in reality, in practice, how in the world do you do it? So what I'd like to do in the next few slides is share with you some of the things we've done at the Emory Public Health Training Center. And what you will see on some of the slides is you'll see some quotes from some of our learners. And so this will be some of their perspective in their own words as well. So one of the first things we do with our trainings is we develop a climate of mutual respect. How do we do that? Well, first thing, you need to know who your target audience is and who your learners are. So one of the things we do is we do a pre-training assessment. We want to know something about our audience. And we don't want to just know their names and what their job titles are, but we want to know what their prior experience is with the topic. We also want to know what skills, what knowledge are they seeking to get from the trainings that they're going to come to. Faculty as facilitators. Our faculty really interact with our learners. We specifically select people that have expertise both from an academic and a practice perspective. You know, they're instructing on best practices, but they're also facilitating. They're able to understand that the participants have experiences, and they're able to pull those experiences from the learner. They're definitely not a talking head. And then in little things, and it almost might seem silly, we don't call the faculty Dr. So-and-so. I mean, we're very informal in that sense. People go by first name basis. We make sure everybody has name tags and name tints so everybody knows who everybody is. You know, taking time to ask questions to check for understanding. So there's a lot to be said for interpersonal interactions as well. Another thing we do is we promote active learning. So we are constantly interspersing didactic with hands-on activities. We use problem-based activities. We really create and strive to create a collaborative learning environment. So I'll give you a couple of examples. In the evaluation training that we do, there's a segment on logic model development. Carly, you might like that one. And what the instructor does is she brings pieces of a logic model together, and the learners, after they learn sort of the basic structure of what a logic model is, they put the logic model together. It's almost like a puzzle, in fact. But they're creating a logic model for an existing program. In our needs assessment training, our community needs assessment training, the learners get actual transcripts from key informant interviews, and they get hands-on practice learning how to code transcripts. And the neat thing about having collaborative learning environments is that our learners are working in multidisciplinary small groups. So not only are they learning the content together, but they're learning what each other does. They're developing their own professional networks and their own professional relationships. And so it's not uncommon for us to see people making connections with each other and talking about collaborating once the trainings are over. Also, we build on the experiences of our learners. So as we've already said, one of the things you have to do to be able to build on those experiences is know your audience, and I've already talked about that. But we also want to elicit experiences from learners. So example, we had a grant writing training recently. The instructor was talking to the learners, and one of the learners shared an experience. She was a dietitian. And she said, you know, when I meet with the WIC moms, a lot of the WIC moms come back, and they've got the voucher still for evaporated milk. They're using all the other vouchers, but the evaporated milk voucher they're always bringing back. Started asking questions, and what she realized was the WIC moms didn't know how to use evaporated milk, didn't know how to cook with it, so they weren't buying it. And so at this training, what this particular learner wanted to do is she wanted to look for funds so she could apply for a grant to develop a training program to educate WIC moms on how to cook with evaporated milk. And so the instructor for that class was able to use that experience, and they talked about, well, how would you pull together this kind of grant proposal? Also instruct for utility. So use realistic scenarios in our case studies. And we use scenarios that are either real issues that the learners currently are dealing with, or it would be realistic and real, you know, that they might be dealing with in the future. Our trainings are competency-based, and we use the Council on Linkages competencies. So these are skills that have already been identified as others that are important skills for public health practitioners to have, so there is utility there. We've also learned that a number of our learners are seeking continuing education opportunities, and they don't always have a lot of opportunities to get CE credits. And so when we can, we provide those continuing professional education credits for them. And then finally, we really want to support learner independence. Sometimes this is as easy as just providing resources for further learning, websites, names of key contact people. But when we can, we also try to provide follow-up assistance as needed. So having faculty make themselves available down the road for follow-up questions. It's really when you start to apply this information in your real setting that you have additional learning that occurs. So let me stop for a moment and give you a quick case study from the Georgia Department of Public Health. We worked with a dietetic internship program. This is a program, it's a one-year program. Nutritionists in our state who are preparing to take the registered dietitian exam participate in the one-year internship. The year includes going to certain trainings as well as doing certain assignments and activities, and one of those assignments is they have to do a needs assessment. Well, doing community needs assessment is completely foreign to this group of individuals. So we've got a faculty member over on the left there, Dr. Dawn Como, who does a needs assessment training. And then over the course of about the next 6 to 8 months, she periodically meets with a group of dietitians. As they come and have questions, she's able to address those questions and do follow-up one-on-one, really technical assistance almost, with them. So she's able to create a climate of mutual respect because she's working with them over time. She's promoting active learning, building on experiences of the learners. They're working on a real project. She also is instructing for utility. These folks have to do this project in order to then sit for the registered dietitian exam. And she's able to support learner independence as well. And so I will end with some challenges that we have encountered. And the first challenge is really time. And time becomes an issue on a couple of different dimensions. First of all, do you have enough time to cover the content? A lot of the topics that we cover, you know, you could do a whole graduate level course, semester course on the various topics, and we're trying to do it in 1 day or 2 days. Also, time away from the office becomes an issue. Travel to get to training sometimes becomes a challenge and gets in the way. We have found that many of our learners have varying levels of experience prior to the training. So we have people with lots of experience and people who have very little experience. And then finally, the translation of adult learning theory into distance-based environments. The trainings I've been talking about have been in-person trainings. And while it is absolutely possible to translate adult learning theory and incorporate adult learning theory into distance-based environments, sometimes it takes some additional creativity and some additional thought to be able to do that. And we will take questions at the end.